The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. And as always, great to be in for Dory. Honor to be on the show. And a lot of fun to be back in the studios. But you don't care about me. What you care about is The Big Lead. And The Big Lead is, of course, the guy who thinks he's the biggest of all time. It's Donald Trump saying that he is launching his 2024 bid in a very lengthy speech last night. So lengthy, in fact, I kept asking, is that still on? Is that still on?
I think that's the only predictable thing about it. He came out so kind of low energy, but I think that that was very strategic on his part. He was trying to appeal to more, be calm, and then he just, of course, gets attacked for that. But I think that the length of the speech was the most predictable thing about it.
I don't think DT would like being called low energy, because if there's one thing he doesn't want. Now, and by the way, people who are right now, you know, criticizing Trump for being low energy. And I think he was trying to be the kind of this was the Trump as presidential tone as best he can. When it comes to that, it's a more measured tone. He's not doing the rally cries as much. And he's talking about basically the country's gone to hell in a handbasket since he's left. And he's the one that can fix it and make America great again. And great, beautiful, wonderful, all the wonderful attributes that you can shower on there. And usually there's some repetition. But remember who he's compared to, right? Because for President Biden, no offense to Biden fans out there, but a low energy Trump is still nine times the energy of a high energy Biden at this point. Biden does not exactly exude energy. Now, you know, there's based on the midterms, basically the midterms where America said, let's elect everybody who's already there and call it good. There's some question as to whether or not anybody wants high energy, or do they just kind of want normalcy, which is, remember, that's what Biden basically promised. He was basically the first campaign. I forget the guy who ran back in the 1880s or so from his porch. I'm thinking of not Hoover. I think it was Coolidge. Keep cool with Coolidge. They were just presidential candidates would be sitting on their porch and they'd answer questions from reporters. They didn't go on the big campaign swings. It was basically, you know, kind of kicking back at home. Biden was basically doing that, saying, I'm not this other guy. And that's, you know, how he ends up being president of the United States. So the question for Trump is, you know, do they want, you know, is the frustration with inflation, with the price increases, with the world, national security developments and other things, is the country, you know, clamoring for a Trump return? Now, you know, there have been some recent polls showing Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, being a preferred presidential choice. And so Trump is doing a bit of preemptive work here by staking his ground, warning off all comers. And you've got a lot of people that were clearly interested in 2024, some of whom, you know, might be shying away because they don't want to do a battle with Donald Trump. And there's some reasons for that we'll get into in just a moment. But, you know, first, it's all Trump all the time last night.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
Now, this is one of those times when, you know, Trump is speaking about America's comeback, but of course, you know, it's his campaign.
This is a movement. This is not for any one individual. This is a job for tens of millions of proud people working together from all across the land and from all walks of life, young and old, black and white, Hispanic and Asian, many of whom we have brought together for the very, very first time. If you look at the numbers, if you look at what's happened with Hispanic, with African-American, with Asian, and just look at what's happening, this is a party that has become much bigger, much stronger, much more powerful, can do much more good for our country. This is a job for grandmothers and construction workers, firefighters, builders, teachers, doctors, and farmers who cannot stay quiet any longer. You can't stay quiet any longer. You're angry about what's happening to our country. Our country is being destroyed before your very eyes. It's a job for every aspiring young person and every hardworking parent, for every entrepreneur and underappreciated police officer who is ready to shout for safety in America. The police are being treated so badly.
I'm going to press pause on that because I know for those of you who are not Trump fans, you can only listen to so much before freaking out. So we'll do an interjection here. But I actually thought that was probably the best part of his speech in terms of that's Trump trying to make a broad appeal, right? You know, he's pointing out things that have shocked a lot of political observers, which is, you know, the growth in terms of minority votes for Republican candidates. And he's calling out specifically saying, hey, look, I'm after your vote. And he didn't really leave anybody out there. Right. You know, he's young and old, rich and poor. He's out for everybody. And he lists, you know, various minority groups and he's interested in all the votes there. You know, for Trump, this is a pretty broad kind of, you know, I'm out there for you. It's going to take everybody. I need everybody. You know, come be with me. Come join the movement. And then he goes off with the police. Now, there's an interesting phenomenon with Trump speeches. I don't know that this is true, but I suspect it. You know, you'll hear Trump and he's delivering some lines. And then I think he just pauses and ad libs a little bit. So you'll hear something and you think, well, there's a cadence here. There's a flow to this. Then suddenly there's an interruption. It's like when he says, you know, these police that we need their support. We need them to have, the tools they need to keep the public safe. And then he kind of I get the sense that he just pauses, goes off script for a little while, talks about the toughness that they face. And then he gets back on script again. And I think he does that time and again in his speeches. And in last night, that's a part of why the speech went so long. But here's the rest of that cut where he's talking about the police.
These are great people. They can straighten out the crime. They're the ones that know how to do it. We have to give them back their respect and their dignity. This will not be my campaign. This will be our campaign all together.
So, you know, for hardcore Trump fans, you know, they don't mind things being about Trump. And, you know, Trump is the kind of guy who, I mean, look, he gave the interview, I'll never forget watching it. I thought it was going to be a problem for him in 2016 when he was talking to a religious figure. I can't remember the name, some evangelical guy. And he was asked about what he had to apologize for, what he had to ask for forgiveness for from God. And he was like, nothing. You know, I've never done anything wrong. You know, God and I we're pretty good with one another, you know? And so, I thought, you know, that was kind of funny. There's nothing indicating that Trump was going to be asking for forgiveness anytime soon, which, you know, in Christian theology, that's just, you know, Jesus Christ doesn't have to ask for forgiveness because he's without sin. Everybody else has got to get in line and ask for forgiveness. And then Donald Trump puts himself there and says, except for me, I'm good. So, you know, he's an unusual guy. And most of these things that pummel other people do not impact him thus far. There was a point that I thought was kind of strange, and that was the going after Nancy Pelosi. Now, that's red meat stuff for the Republican base, going after Pelosi. But I thought that there was something about it that made it a little awkward.
We have taken over Congress. Nancy Pelosi has been fired. Isn't that right? I told them, I said, if you just keep a little bit lower standard, you're going to have a big victory. They said, let's win by 40 seats. Let's win by 50. I said, if you win by 2 seats, be happy. But she's on her way to another country right now. She's been fired.
So there's a couple of things. One is, you know, there's the approach where in victory you have a magnanimity where you know treat other people especially kind after a victory, and then there's the other approach, and that's where Trump kicks in. But also, since he lost the last race, I just thought it was kind of weird to go emphasis on, hey, haha, this lady got fired. And I know that's one of his trademark lines and stuff, but one of the things about a politician is if you change things up, that can jar people into a new look at you, right? So, you know, I didn't see a lot of different Trump yesterday.
Did you notice he did not call her Nervous Nancy, or I think he called her Crazy Nancy here and there. So he didn't use any of his terrible nicknames, because I think that's something people are like, you have to stop doing. And he's actually maybe making that effort. I don't know. I guess we'll see moving forward. But if this is supposed to be his new beginning, that seems to be. At one point, he said, I'm going to say it, fake news. But he wasn't going to use all of his regular insults and nicknames and you know, things that he says in the past that people get mad at. It was very apparent he was avoiding those.
I'm reminded of the proverb about the, not biblical proverb, but the fable mm-hmm. about the scorpion and the frog. And the scorpion wants to ride across a pond, and the frog's like, no, thanks,
Trump
you're a scorpion.
Uses that. He's mentioned that story.
and Trump, in this case, he's gonna do the insults. I mean, Ron DeSantis wins Florida, which was a swing state just a few years ago, you know, where he won the governor's office by just a handful of votes, 2 percentage points or so. And then he wins by 20 points. And Marco Rubio wins his Senate seat by, 19 points, 18 points, somewhere in there. I mean, you know, Florida's just transformed into a hardcore, I hate using the red-blue stuff, but red state, you know. And, you know, overwhelming majorities, 57% of the Hispanic population of Florida went for the Republicans there. So it was a huge victory in Florida. And, you know, Trump put out that statement about Ron DeSanctimonious. That was a new name there. So I don't think, you know, maybe he just didn't have a new one for Pelosi. Maybe she just didn't have the.
I really think he was trying to set a tone. I don't know that he'll stick to it. I don't think he can.
No.
But I do think that was the goal here. And instead of focusing on that, people called him sleepy and boring and all of these other names that he's been using.
Very important political observers were upset about his energy, including...
He looked like he was about to fall asleep, didn't he? It's like, we will win. We will win.
That's Joy Behar from The View. Always an even-handed political observer from Behar. By the way, interesting point about The View. I don't know if you saw this, but DeSantis was invited to The View, and he had a response to them, which was absolutely hilarious. Did you guys cover that on the Dory Monson show? He had a letter that he sent out to them. He basically quotes The View about him. He says, said you know, your producers tell me that you're interested in understanding my views and my victory here. And then, you know, I'm just curious, which of these comments that you've made recently about me is the one that should suggest to me that you're interested in my real opinion?
But he did go on. He did go on a couple of weeks ago, actually, I think.
Well,
it didn't go great. But.
Well, it depends who he's talking to. If you're talking to The View, it's not going to work for you. But if you're talking to the people outside of The View, you know, you can let them do their worst and see what happens. But anyway, so they weren't happy about Trump, and that's predictable. I feel like most of the comedy shows and the shows that are just kind of supposed to be for everybody, they're kind of not, you know, in that way, and that gets a bit tiresome. And I think, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with other possible contenders. Does Trump have, you know, a golden path to the Republican nomination this time around as a former president? Because remember, even if he runs, you know, he's got plenty of baggage, but he also has one term. He can't run for a second term this time because you can only be president for two full terms. And so he would be, you know, an instant second termer. And he's also older. And
redo everything he did the first time.
Yep. And so there's plenty of – and there's other people now that have kind of adopted portions of his no-apology approach and his agenda, or at least the agenda that he adopted. And so it'll be interesting to see based on, you know, some polls and some popularity with other potential players like Ron DeSantis of Florida and Nikki Haley, for example.
But doesn't that bring you back to the days of Chris Christie when everybody thought that he would run maybe against Obama in the second term, you know, running? But everybody was excited about him and they're like, no, don't run now because we'll want you in 4 years when it's more likely that you could win. And that didn't happen.
Well,
don't you wonder who's going to in 4 years be no longer an option?
Right. The embrace of Chris Christie. Remember, there was a point in the election where he gave Obama a big hug when he showed up after, I think there was a hurricane or something there. And it just it was a political bad move at that point in time. I'm not saying you can't have a handshake respectfully, but it was more like, you know, oh, thank God you're here, you know, and people are looking at it like, wait a second, what? And that was kind of the beginning of the end for Chris Christie. Plus, the whole embarrassing traffic stop for political purposes was tough for him.
Right.
That said, Christie's kind of a charismatic figure. He's made a bit of a comeback, and he's always been an interesting guy. But New Jersey also, I mean, it's really tough. It reminds me of the Saturday Night Live skit. I don't know if you remember it, but when Bill Clinton ran, it's very funny with Phil Hartman. When Bill Clinton ran and Saturday Night Live was skewering him, they were talking about education, and he was like, you know, and Arkansas has improved dramatically in education. We've gone up two places, you know, to 48th in education, you know, and we're coming up on you, Alabama, you know, and it was just hilarious. So there's a similar kind of thing with New Jersey where I've always thought it would be tough for somebody to say, you know what, I want America to be like New Jersey, right? It's just I know for the Jersey Shore crowd, that's a great thing. But the rest of America, I don't think many people are going,
I hope that Ron gets his chance, because I think that somebody likable like that, I know they'll destroy him and he'll become less likable somehow. But I like the possibility there. And I really hope that if he doesn't run this time, I hope he does get the chance to run, because I think he's probably the best shot that Republicans have. And because if Marco Rubio can make it very far, then I don't know who can, right? And so other than maybe Ron DeSantis.
Well, remember, too, the presidential races are weird and bizarre. I mean, I did not predict – I did predict that Hillary would not win. I feel good about that. I did not predict that Trump would win, because there are so many things he
I remember this. I remember our conversation well. He would, and you said, no, he won't. I said he absolutely will.
Did not see that coming. I feel really good about previous political predictions, including Obama beating Hillary and all this kind of thing. But Trump was the one I got very wrong.
The day he walked down the escalator, you and I had that conversation, and I called. I said, well, that's going to be the winner. And he said,
and
no
I was
way,
like, no way. No way. And there were, by the way, there were numerous moments where I would have doubled down on that bet. Thank God I never bet you on that one. David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 90s. Oh, by the way, but this is the big lead, and I'll tell you something.
Yeah, you missed the sound but there, but that's okay.
Well, I know that. But the networks, a lot of the networks did not cover Trump's announcement, which I thought, you know, whether you love or hate the guy, that is news, right? I mean, it's the former president
MSNBC
running.
MSNBC decided not to cover it. I think the New York Times maybe put it in like their sixth page or something crazy.
And that kind of feeds into the fake news, the hashtag fake news kind of approach that Trump and his supporters have. And so you look at that and say, wait, you know, how do you not cover that?
Right. And as a tease for the next segment, we're going to talk to Tom Nelson, who I saved just for you because I know you're a hunter, and we're going to bring in a fellow hunter. Yeah.
We'll explain why your next walk in the woods might be your last, coming up on the Tory Monson Show.
Okay, that's not the case.
Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. David Bowe's filling in for Dory Monson. The Biden administration's come up with a plan, and the plan is to introduce grizzlies in the North Cascades, grizzlies in Washington State. Now, in Washington State, we've been on a tear of late in an attempt to reduce things like cougar hunting, reduce black bear hunting, and we've had increased interactions, some of them unpleasant, between humans and these animals. And there's a lot of animals having unpleasant interactions with these particular animals that people tend to like, and they're warm and fuzzy, you know, deer, elk, and other animals that get overhunted by these predators because there are fewer humans reducing the numbers of those predators, because we have a wildlife management that is focused more on ideology than biology. And there's, you know, an ideological drive in Washington that's supposed to be governed by science. I mean, our governor is continually to talk about how he wants everything governed by science, but the science gets set aside for animal rights activism, and especially when it comes to these areas. Now, to talk about this idea of the Biden administration, you know, in this environment introducing grizzlies, we have Tom Nelson from Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN joining us. Tom, thanks for making the time.
David Bowes, thanks to have me, and good to meet you, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe it. I've always been an outdoor guy myself. I've hunted my whole life. I've hunted bear, elk, deer, cougar, anything basically except for birds. I've hunted a few birds, but I'm not saying I'm a great hunter. I'm just or a good hunter. I'm just saying, you know, I enjoy it. I do it. I spend a lot of time outdoors whenever possible. Now that I've got four kids, all under 6 years old, I haven't hunted in a few years now. But I miss it. Now, one of the things that struck me while I used to hunt bears out toward the Cascade foothills out past Issaquah, and one of the things that struck me as kind of funny was I would be out there and people that were hiking would say. They'd stop and say, "What are you doing out here?" And I'd say, "Well, I'm hunting bears," and they would say, "There's bears out here," you know, like in shock that there's bears and cougars. And I said, "Well, yeah, they live in the woods, you know." And they were always, I mean, it was funny to me how people walking their dogs and going on these hikes just had no idea that there was bears and cougars out in these places where they took their walks, you know. And some of them were pretty big bears and cougars based on my own experience out there. So, you know, now we've got this idea of bringing grizzlies into the mix. Now, I'm sure you and I both know that there's always been a handful of grizzlies in Washington State. You know, there's been sightings in Leavenworth from the early 80s and a couple more recently anecdotally. But this idea of trying to increase that population, you know, strikes me as problematic, particularly when right now there's a drive to reduce, you know, hunting for black bears and some of the interactions that we've been having with the wildlife there. What are your thoughts on the Biden administration's plan?
Well, you make a great point. And being a hunter yourself, you understand the conservation model. And that's been used for basically 100 years here in this country, where hunters and anglers harvest animals. They keep the populations under control. They generate revenue, provides food and recreation for the hunters and the people that love being outdoors. It gives you a deeper understanding, David, of the outdoors and how we fit into the ecosystem. And so the problem has been now that we are starting to see management by ideology rather than biology. And you made the comment about animal rights and which, you know, is going to result in less hunting and it's costly and divisive. And that's really the problem. So against this backdrop of where we have lost our spring bear hunt this year, in my opinion, directly resulting in an attack on a woman last month in Leavenworth, we now see the Biden administration pushing forward a grizzly bear reintroduction. Well, grizzly bears and brown bears are two different critters. And where an interaction with a black bear would be survivable in some instances, grizzly bears are larger. They have longer legs, longer fangs, longer teeth, bigger bodies, they're stronger. And I've spent a bit of time with these critters up in Alaska, and the strength and power in these animals is nothing less than awe-inspiring. We've had four incidents, David, in the past 4 years. One of them a fatality in 2018 of a mountain biker that was killed by a cougar. Okay, now that's just the fangs and flesh documented interactions that we've had. I think people, you just mentioned the fact, oh, there's bears out here. You have no idea what has its eyes upon you in the woods. And now we see, you know, even back east now, we've seen the New Jersey governor had to retrace his steps. Okay. So Governor Phil Murphy, just this week, has had to backtrack because of a hunt that he, during his administration, disallowed in New Jersey. He's had to reinstate a bear hunt because of increasing bear human reactions. So why are we going down this path? Are the lives of Washingtonians any less important than those of New Jerseyans? I don't think so. And it troubles me when you see the end result of these actions of allowing more predators in our woods and now more human interactions. And so, again, it's ideology over biology, David.
Yeah, I mean, I know that bear hunting is one of the least popular forms of hunting. People don't like it in general, you know, when you see polls of individuals. So those who are anti-hunting kind of have their, you know, they're salivating at the thought of banning that first, and then you move on to others like deer and elk because people don't understand it. I think you're right. Being an outdoors person, you do have a better understanding of where food comes from, a better appreciation of nature because you're living in it and you're a part of it. And you know, my brother, who's been somewhat of an activist on the spring bear hunt issue, he wrote a book called The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting, and he's been taking pictures of some of the small trees that have died and trying to educate people that, you know, one of the reasons you have these spring bear hunts is because they eat the bark around the trees. It causes, you know, a lot of dead trees in areas where they're trying to get them to grow. And then dead trees make good fire kindling, you know, and then you have more problems. So there's a balanced approach. But also, you know, when these predators are not hunted and their populations grow and all of a sudden they're lacking, you know, the animals that they hunt to eat, you know, then they're going to look elsewhere and spread elsewhere. And that's where you have really problematic human-animal interactions. Or, you know, you start losing the animals that you take for granted, the elk and the deer and things like that. I hunted in Idaho on a drop-off hunt one time with my dad as a special, you know, hunt for him. And we went to an area that Idaho had introduced the wolves in. And it was a place where people used to go and hunt elk all the time. You know, I've never been to a place more dead, never been to a place with fewer animal tracks, you know, and this is five experienced hunters walking miles and miles and miles every day, crisscrossing mountainsides.
Are you speaking of the river, no return in the Frank Church wilderness?
it was just death. I mean, I've never seen a place more dead. I saw one grouse, you know, in 9 days.
That's what we've heard this season from the Frank Church Wilderness, and a number of friends of mine that have gone back there, and where before this was an amazingly productive place, they go back during a time where the deer, the elk are rutting, and they're vocal and they bugle. This was silent to them, and they saw very few animals. So what they did see, David, was wolves and wolf track and wolf sign. And so again, I've just got to go back 1 week to TWS, the Wildlife Society, which is a 2,000 wildlife biologists met in Spokane last week. It's a yearly convention. And for one of the first times this year, they were addressed by a group called Washington Wildlife First, which is a nonprofit whose mission is transforming the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife from a model of consumptive use. And that's a real red flag to me, because now you're letting anti-hunters into the management process. And look, we know the effects of good biology conducted by professionals using vetted science. We've seen it for over a century. We've seen its success for over a century in this country, David. And now to turn our back on the science and be the governor of New Jersey, Phil Murphy, you know, have to retrace his steps because he took these woke ideology over biology steps in New Jersey, and now people are being threatened by a burgeoning bear population. So against that backdrop, the wolf reintroduction, and now you're putting grizzlies back in the Cascades, we know where this is going to end. And it's going to end in a tragedy.
Right.
Okay. There's no reason for this. It's not good. It's not good for our ecosystems. It's not good for the individual animals. You know, it's certainly not good for it. And the sad thing is it's an alienation too of the hunters and the shareholders who have supported WDFW over the years with their license dollars, with the tax dollars. The Pittman-Robertson Act alone has pumped millions of dollars into the federal budget to support, you know, hunting and good conservation programs. And so for the state of Washington to turn their back on that, for Governor Inslee to appoint commissioners that are openly hostile to hunting and angling, and actually it's breaking the law, David, because in the RCW's revised code of Washington states that we are to manage these species, providing opportunity for hunting and fishing. And so, you know, and we are seeing this in the fishing side too, where WDFW sets a lot of salmon seasons right now that are completely untethered to abundance. And if you're not managing your fisheries toward where you have a harvestable surplus, then what are you doing?
Now, I've seen this. I you know, years back when I was regularly on the air, I remember speaking with a state biologist. He wanted to remain anonymous because, you know, for obvious reasons. And part of that was because, you know, he was from a different era, and he just said, look, the state is hiring people in the Fish and Wildlife Department that are you know, committed to anti-hunting. It's that they're not interested in trying to make it work. They're not interested in managing animals. They're interested in their ideology there. And one of the things that he experienced was he was going through a stream and they were looking for a certain kind of endangered, seeing if there was an endangered snail there. And there was all kinds of pressure, you know, for them to see the endangered snail that, you know, did not exist there. And he said, and they picked up a snail, and he said, well, this is one of these endangered snails. No, it's not, and here's why. And there was a lot of pressure, and you know, he said, I was really uncomfortable with how many people were trying to get me to, you know, to go along with this, and the whole the politics of Washington State Wildlife was really bothering them. Now, this many years ago, they're out of it now, but you know, it's only gotten worse from there. And, you know, with the Biden administration interfering, as you point out, you know, it'll take a tragedy, but probably more than one, because there'll be a tragedy, you know, of human interaction. There'll be tragedies of wildlife, you know, diminishment because of too many predators and the lack of management there. And I think it's part of this divorce that we have. You know, we have a state that has agriculture as an economic engine. You know, we have more employees related to agriculture than we do Microsoft and Boeing combined. And you know, jobs, and yet, you know, there's a very urban environment for most legislators, and they don't understand agriculture. They don't live that life. They're not experienced in it for the most part. Same with the outdoor, you know, hunter fisher perspective. And they, you know, they're doing what they think is the good thing, but they don't really have an experience in it. And I think, you know, that kind of lack of humility is going to cause us big problems down the line.
Well, I don't know that they think they're doing the right thing. I think they're told they're doing the right thing.
Well, that too.
I don't know if there's enough individual involvement at the legislature level. And as far as WDFW personnel that I work with, the rank and file biologists and the enforcement people, man, they're outdoor people through and through. But it's coming from the top, David, in my opinion.
Hey, Tom, what's on the show this weekend?
You know what? I appreciate you teeing that up for me. We're actually going to do a remote from Three Rivers Marine in Woodinville, and we're going to hang out there 9 till noon and help folks out with their hunting and fishing challenges. Or if we can help you tie a leader, help you bait a hook, we're going to try to do that on Saturday at the number 3 rivers marine.com.
That's awesome. Hey, thanks, Tom. Appreciate you being on the show and having your insights here. And hopefully we won't see too many grizzlies reintroduced here in Washington State anytime soon.
Yeah, or at least we'll hope we'll see them first.
Or if we're going to introduce them, let's do it on, you know, somewhere in a park in downtown Seattle or, you know, somewhere real close by so they change their mind real quick.
Yeah, let's start in West Seattle.
There we go. All right. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. You know, the tragedy at the University of Idaho, murders of four Idaho students, one of them from here in Washington, just heartbreaking. You know, my brother's son, you know, used to ride the bus with one of the victims here. And you know, you just look at the photograph and you see four happy kids filled with potential, everything that youth has to offer, all that exuberance and, you know, the joy of life and experience and excitement for what the future holds. And there's just, you know, there's not a care in the world. They're just, you know, ready to go and have this, you know, and live life, you know, and have fun. And all of them, I'm sure their families are just, you know, thinking about the potential and dealing with the crush of all that lost potential, the loss of the love, the loss of the expectations of family and togetherness that they'd have for their futures, you know. But you know, there's been a strange thing about what's happening in Idaho. The university town's been depleted. Students are leaving class, leaving early wherever possible. There's pictures of the cafeteria just about empty. Very gruesome pictures of the murder scene, you know, where blood is literally running out of the siding of the house, you know, from you know, down the foundation because of the gruesomeness of the scene, which has got to be a nightmare and horrific for everybody involved here. But, you know, the police keep saying that you know, the authorities are saying things like, you know, we don't expect there's a danger to the community, a broader danger to the community. You know, they're looking at a possible crime of passion, but they're also looking at a possible burglary gone wrong. See, you know, when I look at this, I just think, you know, how do we know that there's no threat there? No wonder the kids are leaving. I should say kids. No wonder the young adults are leaving the town, because if your child is at this university and they're saying, hey, there's somebody on the loose here that just committed someone or some people that just committed four gruesome homicides. And, you know, maybe they had a particular motive for that. But, you know, generally speaking, people don't like to get caught either. Right. So I'd be thinking, you know, for myself, I'd be thinking, well, just because somebody, you know, they were willing to kill somebody because of some other emotional reason doesn't mean they wouldn't be willing to do it again if they thought they might get caught or they thought they were recognized or whatever. So, you know, I don't know. You know, obviously it's an ongoing investigation, so they're not going to share everything and they can't. I just find the attempt at kind of calming the community by saying, hey, we don't think that there's a danger here. I think that's just going to fall flat. I don't think you can do it that way, particularly with these circumstances. It's just horrific. David Bowes in for Dory Monson.